The Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy, SCAA, two of their friends, is a leading statewide policy analysis and advocacy organization working to shape policies to improve health, welfare, and human services for all New Yorkers, especially those who are disenfranchised. Kate Breslin is the president and CEO of the Schuyler Center. Their mission is to build upon its long history as a strong independent voice and coalition builder that holds government accountable and helps to shape public debates around social policies that affect New Yorkers. Kate has spent her career analyzing and advocating in support of policy solutions that improve the lives of people in the U.S. and abroad. In the last hour, we talked about their fundraiser that is coming up with Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kate Breslin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here.
Well, wonderful to have you here. So how do you easily describe, I tried to do it briefly in an introduction, but how do you easily describe what it is that you do and how you work with, as I said, the disenfranchised?
Well, I think it is sometimes it's tough to explain, and we always are working on our elevator speech. But
right.
As you said, we try to hold government accountable for policies that affect the most disenfranchised New Yorkers. So often our issue areas look at how the child welfare system is working for kids and families, how the healthcare system and coverage systems are working for people who have debilitating illness or mental illness, and how public systems are working to support the most vulnerable New Yorkers.
This is the time-honored problem, isn't it, where people say, well, the government sitting up there on Capitol Hill on the top of State Street is coming out with these particular guidelines, but which look okay on paper, fine, and now we have to implement them and see how they work in the real world. And this is where you step in and say, okay.
Yeah, and we take a look at the data as much as we can, and often we're advocating for better data, because and you know, I know that you interviewed Nick Kristof earlier, that we do know what works. We do have evidence now about social interventions that work. And so we are now trying to do a really good job at making sure we're looking at defining the problem and then looking at what the data tells us about what works as solutions.
So you just said something that I find fascinating, and that is we're always looking for better data. So what would improve that? What would get you better numbers, better data, better information to help you make the decisions that you're making that ultimately influence the decisions that are being made in government?
Well, often it's both. Usually it's dollars and people.
Yeah.
So we're looking for better data about how money is actually spent. Sometimes we have data that tell us that the state put money out to a community, often to counties, because in our system much is done at the county level. But we don't have good evidence about then what happened to the money. And I'm not suggesting that anything bad happens, but so data about how money gets spent, and then even more importantly, what are the outcomes for the very people that we're talking about?
And it would seem to me, as an outsider looking in, that the biggest problem of that is the unknown, if you will, is the number of people that you are caring for, the number of people that you are concerned about, because I assume that's a moving target.
Yeah, it's a moving target in the sense that often we're looking at a population, we say, of people who are living in poverty. And as we know, those numbers change, people move in and out. But we do have, and frankly, we're looking at populations, not individual people,
right,
when we're doing data analysis and trying to shape policy. And also, one of our big challenges is that we find that when it comes to shaping policy, there are many vested interests out there. There are many entities that stand to gain from one particular policy or another. We're one of the few organizations that doesn't have a vested interest in a particular result. So even do-good organizations that are, for example, providing health care for needy people, have a vested interest in their own survival. So we see ourselves as as one of the few organizations here in Albany trying to shape policy that doesn't have a vested interest except the people who are disenfranchised.
So how do you stay afloat?
Well, we get grant funding. And actually, you know, that's another thing that Christoph and Woudon talk about in their book, that advocacy is often sort of a tough sell for funders,
right?
Because it's a little harder to say it's easier to say we've delivered 100 meals to 100 people,
sure,
than it is to say we've tried to influence policy but in the end, policy that might affect millions of people. We often look at policies at our organization that nobody else is paying attention to, so sometimes the not so sexy policies.
Sure.
And one of them recently that we had a great success in was children's oral health through community water fluoridation. So children's oral health, dental disease is the most common chronic disease among children, and it's a condition of poverty. Kids in poverty are much more likely to suffer from dental disease. So we looked at the data and we did an analysis of what kind of interventions would be most effective. And far and away, the most effective and cost-effective intervention is community water fluoridation. So thankfully, we had some great data from the Department of Health that showed much higher public expenditures for children's oral health in communities that don't have fluoridation and lower expenditures in communities that do. So we worked on shaping New York's policy so that more kids will have access to community water fluoridation.
So basically you're working on the infrastructure.
Yeah, we think of it as systems work.
Yes, systems.
Yes.
Which is that's a fraught term, isn't it? Systems, of how we think of what a system is.
Yeah, I think sometimes it makes people go ho-hum.
Or, well, that we think that we can become a cog in the system, that there are many things that can get screwed up in a system.
Yeah, and often I feel as though one of our jobs as external advocates is to shine the light. Because
yes.
I think there can be cracks in the system or there can be giant gaping holes in the system, but if they're tucked away and hidden, we don't see them.
But and not to replace your metaphor, which is perfect, if you use infrastructure in the sense of, and you were saying, you know, the sexiness of it, of going out and we're doing this and we're doing that, and you can see it and it's very tangible. But if you build a new bridge, then everybody sees the new bridge. But if you're sitting under there and you're putting up the planks to protect the old bridge and make sure that it doesn't fall down, then nobody really notices that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the difference, too, between sort of the revolutionary approach and the incremental approach.
Sure.
And oftentimes we have a beautiful vision of a revolutionary approach of, a great example of something that we're working on is early childhood education for all kids in New York. And in the perfect world, we would have it today. We would have universal early childhood education for every single kid that needs it. The reality is we're cranking along bit by bit, you know, eking it out, trying to get it into communities most in need, and then, you know, a few more communities. So yeah, you build it bit by bit by bit, and sometimes you don't see the result for a very, very, very long time.
So let me ask you a very nuanced question. Why do the poor so often get screwed? In the sense of what is it about our system, if you will, that allows there to be so many people who are disenfranchised and not a part of that system? Why is the system not more controlling in taking those people who are having difficulties, and whether that be health and welfare and human services, and strengthening them and the systems, that is something that you have to do incrementally and scrimp and save for, as opposed to being very clear blip on the radar?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, sort of at the local level, and again, something that Christoph and Woudon mentioned in their book, that people who live in poor low-income people who live in low-income communities are much more likely to donate a large percentage of their income to charity than our high-income people.
Right.
And I think, in part, that's because we have communities that are so very segregated by income, race, class. And so I don't think it's that people don't care. I think it's that they don't see it every day. So you don't necessarily see that there are, you know, one-third of the kids in our state, nearly one-third living in poverty. You know, that you don't see that because I don't see it unless I want to.
Well, you may not see it, and I may not see it, but the state government and governments in general are getting the data that you're looking at and see that.
And one of the challenges is that there aren't a lot of voices to shape policy to try and change it. So, for example, we often work in collaboration with other organizations working right. to focus on making sure that that low-income kids can get high-quality early childhood opportunities. But there are many other interests out there working for so many other things, and they have a vested interest in seeing the system continue as it is. And I think so that's why I think the work that our organization does is important, because we're trying to bring that voice to a place where you often don't see it.
So do you think of your organizations and the organizations that you partner with are optimistic?
Yeah, I think if we weren't, we wouldn't be doing it. And I think the victories that we get, they may not be the revolutionary ones. They're the right. they're the incremental ones. And so, you know, if another few thousand kids are able to get into pre-K this year, that's
well, that
a
seems
step.
Like to me like you've won a revolution. I mean, that's how you look at it, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at the difference between it may be a smaller battle, but it's still a hell of a battle.
Yeah, and you know, frankly, I think going back to the systems question, you know, a lot of it is just trying to make our systems work better together.
Yeah.
So, a lot of times we have several systems working in New York, whether it's state systems and county systems and different agencies working together. And when we're able to get two systems to work together to make something better for a kid living in foster care. So we did some policy work to try and make sure that kids who had been in foster care can continue to get health coverage till they're age 26. It may seem small because it's in the tens of thousands of kids, but it's a huge victory for us and for those kids who can now, or young people who can now get the health care that they need. It's a massive victory. So yeah, I think we're all optimists.
Tell us in the minute that we have left about the event that it happens on the 29th, next Thursday, with Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun.
On Thursday, October 29th, we're having a breakfast event with Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun, who are Pulitzer Prize winners.
Yep.
And we found that we have a lot of common themes with them: poverty, investing in early childhood education, investing in women and girls. And we invited them to come and help us do a fundraiser next Thursday, the 29th, in Albany. It'll be breakfast, and participants who register will get breakfast, parking, and a book, which is their
in
newest.
In Albany, the parking very, is the most important.
I
book.
Added that in.
Yeah.
And their new book is called A Path Appears, and it is a very optimistic book.
Absolutely. You can find out more information by going to the website for the Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy. It's scaany.org. scaany.org. Kate Breslin, thank you very much. President and CEO of the Schuyler Center, a great pleasure to have you on the program, and I thank you very much for all the great work that you do.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more information about the fundraiser with Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun by going to scaany.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.